We're going to speak about the phenomena of Polish Hasidus. Polish Hasidus was a unique branch of Hasidus that rose in Poland. It, in many ways, today it's the most significant area of Hasidus for the people outside of the world of Hasidus. And we'll try to trace a little bit the development and the chidushim of so-called Polish Hasidus. The Baal Shem Tov had two Talmidim. One of them was called the Teldis, two main Talmidim, let's say, and one of them was called the Magid. The Mesrisha Magid, or Rubna Magid, was the one whose Talmidim is spread out to many countries and became the founders of Hasidus in different places. Most famous is Baal HaTanya, who established Hasidus in White Russia, in Litta, and Reb Melech, Noam Elimelech, who went to Poland and who was active in Poland and spread Hasidus there. Now, the Rebbe Reb Melech was definitely represented classic Hasidus. The one who the Noam Elimelech is quintessential classic Hasidus. The one who took over from him was the Chozim Lublin, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Horowitz, and he was born in 1745 and was lived in 1815. The Chozim Lublin became probably the rooted figure in Poland and the one that is considered to be the first really established chatzar in Poland. Chozim Lublin was a Kaddish. He was called a Chozer because of his abilities to seem to sort of see things with Ruach HaKodesh. The story goes that he worked very hard in Shmir Sinaim when he was young, and that's why he was zeicher to eyes that could see beyond. So the Chozim Lublin established a court in Lublin, and that became a makom where many, many Gedolei Hasidus were yonik from. The Chozim Lublin was the one who really, really brought out classic Hasidus. And I'll try to explain what I mean by classic Hasidus. One, the focus was on the Pashat Yid, on the person who hadn't been touched by the Talmid Chachamim and so on. It was simple Pashat, maybe a little bit despaired of ever becoming something. That was the person that was the focal point of that Hasidus. So the Pashtayid, the Hamoin Am, and so on. The biggest single aspect of his Avodas Hashem was to become Dovuk in the Tzaddik. The Tzaddik is somebody who is totally immersed in Avodas Hashem in the most perfect way possible. And therefore, it is by association, the Hamoinam associate with this Adam, with this Tzaddik. They learn from his Maisim, he keeps them in line, they share the bond of Kedusha with him, and on a mystical way, his neshama is called his neshama is davak, and his neshama, and so on, and that is what's mechaber them to avim shebashamayim. So the figure of the tzaddik as being a person who is much closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and you being mistabek them, is a very central part of it. The Torah that they said, was not a significant part of, it wasn't the outstanding part of the Avoda. There was a lot of Chibur and Tish and Dibuk and so on. But the genre of the Torah was such that there would not be any Havamina, that what they're saying is Pshat. It's all Torah's Emes. And it is, we'll say that the Psukim de Darshin Asmachtes, that's a good Hasidic word of that genre, is a word that smacks of a tremendous emes, gives us insight in some aspect of what is Hashem or a person. And the pasuk is, I guess, a hook to hang it on. No one, I don't think, has a havamina that this is an attempt at anything like Pshuto Shel Mikra. It's an asmachta. Adrabbi once had a defense of that it's presumptuous to think you could understand the psukim. So this is clearly just an asmachta, be it as it may, the other genre of Torah. Another thing that you find in a lot of these Torahs, in more classical Hasidus, is that the Hasidus is a lot of the Torah focuses on the tzaddik. So you'll have, how come Moshe did this in Yisro? Sometimes a tzaddik will go out and do this and this, save an neshama. Sometimes a tzaddik will do this and this to lower himself down to lift up this. Sometimes a tzaddik will do this. It's almost as if there's a whole Torah's tzaddikim, it's not uncommon. We'll see it when we learn some of the pieces, where it's a whole discussion about a tzaddik and a tzaddik lowering himself and a tzaddik doing certain things in order to generate something else. Those are hallmarks of that class Hasidus. The Chayza never was that way. The Chayza said that the ikar of the Rebbe, of the tzaddik, is to be mispalal, or to ensure that the Hasidim have gashmias. He's supposed to invoke them. He's supposed to deal with their problems, their day-to-day struggles with parnasa and shidduch and the paris and all that stuff, and to help them with it. That was very much part of that Hasidus, and that was the Chayza. Chayza was very, very chashuv. This was it. Something happened at the Chayza's court, and there was a very, very chashuv person. His name was Reb Yitzchak Yaakov Rabinowitz, same name as the Chayza. He was called the Yid HaKadosh, and he was born, he was younger than the Chayza and died before him. He was born in 1766 and died in 1813. He was a big Baal Moichin, somebody who was very bright and intellectual and so on. And he broke away from the Chayza and made his own Hasidus in Pshischa. You need to understand that in those days, and Betzim even today, Hasidus is a very, very Malchustic-oriented structure. For somebody to pick himself up and make his own Rebistva when his Rebbe is living is unforgivable. It's machlokus at its worst. And that's the way it was taken. It was a terrible break. It was a terrible, terrible rift. And it caused a fissure, a real fissure. Chassidim say, there was, again, we don't know much of the details. It's all, people did not speak much Lashon Hara, I guess. But they say that the reason why he broke off, and the person who set the Chayza against him, was somebody who was a big tzaddik. He was in the chatzar, and he felt that the Yid HaKadosh is kind of breaking away, going off the derech. Somebody was some sort of catalyst. And the way the Chassidim put it was that the Baldova, the Sutton, guarded this person's tongue for 22 years. He shouldn't speak any Lashon Hara. So that when he would come to the Chayza would believe him. That's the way it's given over. But he created a break. And it was his Talmidim, who actually brought about, who were the ones that developed what we call Pesach Hasidus. The Chayza himself was Nifta, like we said, in 1815. It was kind of a very tragic death. He fell out of a window. The Maskilim made up the ugly stories about it. The Hasidim said he was fighting with the Sutton about the Geula, and he was going to bring Mashiach. Whatever it was, he had an accident out the window. He was sort of bedridden for a whole bunch of months. A famous anecdote is, he said, I assure you that no misnagdim will rejoice at my death, and no misnagid will ever say tachnun on my yard site. It came true because he was niftan Tisha B'Av. So nobody could rejoice, and for eternity, no one's saying any tachnun on Tisha B'Av. Be it as it may, the Velt also says that the same thing was true about the Goyen. The Goyen's yard site is in Chalmoyd Sukkis, and no one says tachnun as yard site. Akaponim, that drew to an end. So the Rabbunim, the Yid HaKadosh broke away. He was not, like we said before, he didn't live long. And a Talmud of his, Rabbunim, Mipshischa, Rabbunim Bonhard, from Pshischa took over. Rabbunim was born Kimat, he was born a year earlier, 1865. He lived longer than the Yid HaKadosh. He was nifted in 1827. Rabbunim was an incredible person, and he's the one that we have a lot about him and his Torah and Pshischa. He himself was a very interesting person. He had studied languages. He had studied pharmacy, which in those days was a big thing. And he was a very interesting person. He was a Talmud Rechayz also. And when the Yid HaKadosh broke off, he went with him. Rabbunim Pshischa was what that derech was known for. And Pshischa made a radical, radical change in almost everything. I would say almost 180 degree turn. First of all, instead of being focused on the Hamonam and Pshuteyam, it was focused on the elite. Whether they said it or not, it was very elite. Two, it demanded that a person be a Talmud Chacham. A person who was not a Talmud Chacham, the Chassidus wasn't geared for that. Three, the Chassidus was there to understand yourself so that you can critique yourself. It was something which the purpose of Chassidus was to strip away layers of nonsense of yourself and get to the emes. It was both the genre of the Torah. The Torah was uniquely insightful of human nature, with all its warts and all its flaws. And it was something that was extremely sharp. The Pshischa's short, succinct, sharp, and you really felt it's like a needle going in. That was Pshischa. Pshischa, Chassidus worked at knocking nonsense out of yourself, pretentiousness, and so on. It generated a whole new approach, which really became the forerunner of what we call Poilech Shel Chassidus. The Pshischa Beis Medrash had many Anashim Gedolim v'Chashuvim. After the Pshischa was Nifta, the one who took over was the Kotzke. The Kotzke was born in 1787 and was Nifta in 1859. The Kotzke was an incredible personality. He brought this Chassidus to its sharpest point ever. The Kotzke was brilliant beyond words. He was a massive Talmud Chacham. We know this from two of his Talmidim. His two Talmidim, the Chedusha Arim and the Avner Nezer, his son-in-law, spoke of his being a Talmud Chacham and a Lamdin in terms beyond. These were two giants in Europe, and therefore we even though the Kotzke himself was a hidden person, no one directly had that knowledge of him as Talmud Chacham, but you had these two huge Chachamim speaking about his Talmud being Talmud Chacham and Nikla. So Nakatsuka had a Beis Medrash. The Beis Medrash wasn't the way we would picture yeshiva. Younger Light would come, they would sit there, and they would try to get from him what he had to offer. What he had to offer usually was very sharp, biting, caustic remarks, knocking people, sort of ripping into them, and so on. The Verta that he says, we have, I think the biggest collection might be Emes V'Emuna. Every so often somebody makes another collection of Verta. He obviously didn't write much, he didn't write anything, but I mean he wrote, but it was supposedly burnt, but Al Kapanu, we don't have anything directly, but everything we have is collections. The Verta are extremely sharp, extremely biting, extremely memorable, and they all deal with a sort of, it has an Ikarim Divrei Emes on every one of them, at least as far as understanding human being, human nature, and sort of the nonsense that we tend to brush ourselves up with. Famous Vart, Leisena, someone asked him, what did you learn in Kotsk? He said, Leisena isha samisoi. So he says, how do you attach a pasuk? He says, you're not allowed to fool other people. He said, and in Kotsk, we said, you're not allowed to fool yourself either. There was one Vart that sort of typifies it. But there's another Vart. A Kotzke, somebody went off to Kotzke learn, he came back, and he asked his friend asked him, what did you learn in Kotzke? So he said, well, let me ask you a question, where's HaKadosh Baruch to be found? So I said, what do you mean HaKadosh Baruch is everywhere? He said, in Kotzke they taught us he's only there when you open up a door for him. In other words, don't think about godless Abayri, think about, are you blocking out HaKadosh Baruch or not? And so on. This was Kotsk. Kotsk brought this Torah, this genre of Avodas Hashem and Torah to a head. The Kotsk himself always expressed dissatisfaction that becomes so popular. He said, he'd always wished for a few handful of Hasidim who would live with Einoid Melvadoi, and he didn't want, he had become some sort of attraction. People felt it was very good on the resume to write that they'd been in Kotsk for a while, and he pushed back a lot. The last 20 years of his life, he basically closed himself off, except for the very closest of Talmidim. He wanted nothing to do with everybody else. We'll speak about it later when we speak about the split off from Kotsk, but at any rate, the Kotsker was somebody who really, in many ways, in terms of the Avodas Hashem of Pshischa, in terms of the ripping of human nature and demands on yourself, was the sharpest version of Pshischa. And that aspect of Pshischa, he was the strongest, the sharpest, and so on. It was not a mahalach that could last, obviously. It sort of was like a fire that consumed itself. We'll speak later when we speak about the break off with Ishbitz and Lublin and so on. We'll talk about that. But when he was nifta, a few of the Hasidim went to to his son, to Reb David, and the majority of Hasidim went to Chedush Harim. Chedush Harim was his Talmud Muvak. Chedush Harim was born in 1799 and was nifted in 1866. Chedush Harim was the one who transformed the Nekuda of Pshischa and Kotsk into a viable Mahalach and Derech for Hasidus in many ways possible. Chedush Harim, first of all, was a much milder version in terms, there was a lot of demand. In other words, it was a focus on demanding of yourself, but none of the sharp, sharp, sharp edge of the Kotzke is not there. He was a recognized guy in learning. He was respected by everybody. Reb Aaron Kotler's grandson told me that when his grandfather said Chedush Harim, when Reb Aaron Kotler said Chedush Harim, he was in awe of the Chedush Harim. Chedush Harim was a guy in Olam. No two ways about it. He was an extraordinarily, he was an ascetic Oved Hashem, and it was something that was a, it was somebody that you could build a Hasidus around, very, very, you know, it was a derech that could last for people. His Torah retained the sense of understanding itself, but there was a lot more pshat in the pasuk. A lot of what we have is brought down in other places, elaborated. They're still short and succinct verta, but they also have a sense of going to the depth of the pasuk. You don't have that sense where the person is saying a davemis and the pasuk is just kind of an asmachta. You have a sense in the verta he has. They're sharp, they're succinct, but you have a feeling that it's getting into the heart of a pasuk. And he established Chassidus Ger, which today is probably the biggest in many ways. It's certainly certainly a very, very strongly controlled group of Chassidim. And he was the founder of it. And Betzim took a derech that was meant for Yechidim and gave it the tzura that could go for many other people. Chedusha himself was an example of someone who had made the switch to Pshischa. He had been a Talmud of the Kozhentzer Magid, was a Talmud of the Choze. The Kozhentzer Magid, again, was more classical, was classical Chassidus. After the Kozhentzer passed away, the Kozhentzer's son took over. Chedushrim continued a little bit by him, wasn't happy with what he was getting, and made the switch to Pshischa. It's hard to know, what exactly in the Kuda. This famous story is that the Kozhentzer's son complimented him once, and he was very, very annoyed by it, and he said, I have a Rebbe, what I want in a Rebbe is somebody to knock me out, to pat me on my back. I don't need a Rebbe, and he left. But whatever it is, Pshischa had been trying for a long time to get to him. Chushim was the crown jewel. Everyone knew that where he would be, that would become the derech. Pshischa tried very hard, and finally, after he became disenchanted with the Kozhentzer, he went to the Pshischa and became a dedicated Pshischa Talmud and then the Kotzka Talmud. Just to give you a sense of the sharpness of Pshischa and how they were provocative, and provocative in a way that got them into trouble. Most normal people thought that they were crazies. There was a famous wedding in Astilla where they tried to get them excommunicated. They had a big meeting. It was a huge wedding. 200 rebbes were there, 200 people wearing white sacks were there, and the apta was the Yoshev Roish, and it was because the Chedusharim stood up for his rebbe that that they gave him his that they backed off. But Pshischa was very provocative. If you want to take a look at, how sometimes hindsight is much, much better than foresight, there's a sefer called Sefer Chassidus by Aaron Marcus. Aaron Marcus was a German Jew who became a Chassid, and he writes about his experiences. And it's fascinating. First of all, it was put out in a few editions. If you go to the library in Hebrew University, you'll note that in each progressive edition, more and more is whited out. The Geras, who consider themselves Pshischidim, kept taking out things that were derogatory to the Gera, to Pshischa. I think it's absolutely crazy, but that's what they did. Basically, his point was the Pshischa people were irresponsible, provocative, and so on. A type of thing that the Pshischa would do is, the one Rosh Hashanah morning, they davened like for Sikkim quickly, and then by the time people in town came to daven, they were sitting back and learning. It got late, and one of our batim goes to them in the back room and says, Rabbeisa, you've got to daven. They say, what kind of davening? Learning is a lot more important. Davening is full of it. But Kitzah, it started a huge, a whopping fight. And they deliberately, there was a sharpness to it and a provocativeness. And Iron Marcus writes that it's clear that Pshischa is just kind of a temporary aberration, but Chassidus will go back to being what the Baal Shem Tov intended it to be, v'cholo, v'cholo, v'cholo. That's a very interesting observation, because in hindsight, I mean, now in hindsight, we know that this became the most dynamic part of Chassidus, and the other Chassidus settled into just kind of, you know, being very nice and wonderful and good and fine. But be it as it may, that was Pshischa, and that's why the Chedusha Rim was the one who gave it a necessary level of mainstream, balance, etc. The Chedusha Rim lost, he had, I believe it was 13 children in his lifetime. I think all of his sons died b'chayav. He felt it was a kpeda of the Koshnitzer Rebbe, because the Koshnitzer Rebbe had been very upset that he left Koshnitz and went to Pshischa. Again, the way the story goes is he said he cried, and he said the Koshnitzer, the first time he noticed the Chedusha Rim not there, he realized he had left. He was very, very upset. He cried and he said, "He's destroyed my Shabbos. His Shabbos will be destroyed." And every child of his, I think, was Niftan Shabbos. That's where the story goes. But certainly he felt it was a kpeda, and Yechdushim said it was difficult, but he did the right thing. And emes is emes, no matter what the price is. There's one other story about this Chedusha Rim losing his children, and that is that the when his last when his oldest son, who was Nifta, last one to be Nifta, Svasemis' father, as he was dying or very sick, the Chedusha's wife came, always mentioned to him, "Nishvi, do something to save him," or inconsolable. And the Chedusha told her, every time a Yid will have a tzara, they're going to say, "You know, it's difficult, but not as difficult as Yitzchak's tzaras, and it will be menachem many Jews." That was a very different type of. That's a darga that, you know, we can't even think about. That was Chedusha Rim. At any rate, his children died b'chayev, and the Sfasemis was a grandson. Sfasemis was born in 1847 and was Nifta in 1905. Sfasemis was someone who didn't have a mother from age 2, father from age 6. Chedusha Rim raised him as a son. Sfasemis was the one who gave Ger and many people a sort of Torah of Chassidus that is quintessential of that Mahalach. Sfasemis was a Kaddish V'Torah, incredible Talmud Chacham. He wrote Sfarim on Moed, on Kachim, that are compatible much with the Lomdische Derech, much more than the Pulpel Derech. Litvish people, Yeshivalite, have full Tainug in learning Sfasemis on these Inyanim. The Lomdische, that's to the point very much. It has a lot of the hallmarks of the Derech Alimud that we used to, as opposed to the pulpul, more pulpul style that they were used to. His sefer on his sefer on Chumash is a collection of Torah that he said at his Tishn. They are in many ways the I don't know what to call it, the Bible or they are the bedrock of that genre of Torah. His Torah is. They hit home at the heart of the pasuk. They use there's a certain element of I guess things that were yearning from Kabbalah, like all Chassidus, Misadin, Misachesed, so on and so forth. But by and large, it's something that you feel is going with a certain vocabulary going to the heart of a pasuk. His points are sharp and succinct. It's like Each sentence, he doesn't. Each sentence is a few words, just the point that needs to be made, and you need to use your head to understand it. But when you finish it, you feel that he has grappled with the heart of an Indian. Rav Moshe Shapiro told somebody once. He asked. Somebody said this at a Hespin or Rav Moshe Shapiro. What is it that you know, Rav Moshe asked him, what's form be used to prepare? When you speak and this person says, Fasamis and other sefer, Rav Moshe said, what's the tushtel? So the person said, what do you mean? I mean, they're both big svarim. He said, this Fasamis, every word of it is muchrach. In other words, it's like when a person sees a lomdish shtickle from a b'chaim or a rav, you say to yourself, yeah, this has to be, this is, it's not a possibility, it seems to be the heart of it. Same thing with Sfasemis. When you learn a shtickle Sfasemis and you know you understand it minimally, the sense is, wow, this is the heart of what it means, and you know this is it. So the Sfasemis's Torah became really the bedrock of it, and for any person on the outside who's yoinik from these inyanim, the unique of the Sfasemis's Torah. That's really where it comes from. Similar to it, but not the same way, would be like the Shemi Shmuel, it would be the different, the Sachachava, they all came from the same Cheder, where there was a need to stick to the point, a need not to use the Pasuk as just kind of an excuse, not to go into fancy gematrias and drushim and all sorts, but rather to try to understand the inner meaning of the Pasuk, the way a Lamdan would try to understand the inner meaning of a Gemara, of a Rambam, and so on. That's what it's like. And so Sfasemis was the one who gave it Geretz Tzura. He lived a short life, and his son was masper to him, and he said, Arichos Yamim. And somebody asked him, what do you mean, Arichos Yamim? And he said, I didn't say Arichos Shanim, he had Arichos Yamim. Every day of his was long, was counted, and so on. The Sfasemis himself seemed to have died of heartbreak. He was nifted in 1905. This was the time when there was the Russo-Japanese War. A lot of his chassidim were being drafted, horrendous conditions. And he didn't know Menucha, he had no Menuchas HaNefesh from it. And he pashut, it destroyed him. But he established the mainstream of Polish Hasidus, which is Ger. It's taken on different forms and so on. Sfasemis is still the Sefer that everybody learns in Ger. That's the Sefer. The Hanhagis that I guess come from Pshisra Kask and so on are a certain brusque matter-of-factness. Anything that's kind of built up and a lot of flowery stuff doesn't go there. Some people see it as being too brusque, and we'll speak about that also. But al kapanim, it's sort of a sense of emes. You know, one of the reasons why today's ger, I don't know. You know, which kufa the basis role, certainly one who started, tremendous emphasis on Kedusha. Part of their rationale for that is that everything else you can tray a cup with. In other words, kosher food in Mahadrin, you can get chazarai with all the Mahadrin you want. It's easy to prava that. Kedusha is something that really, really, you know, you have to work on. It's something that you can't prove and make believe. You know, that's the type of attitude about it. So, Poilus HaChassidus moved, did a few things. First of all, it moved away from it being the Pashta feel good, the feel good Torah for the Pashta Yid. It started as an elite movement. Today it encompasses a big movement, a whole Hasidus of the size of Ger plus. But still, the sense is demanding of people, putting an emphasis on Talmud Torah, because in the Pshisra mindset, it's the only thing that's real. You can prava davening, you can prava this, you can prava that. very hard to travel learning. Learning demands real effort, real concentration, and so on. It went from taking psukim and darshaning them in a way that is a smach de baume, with gematrias and fancy stuff and sort of this and that, to something which tries to get to the heart of the pasuk, to the pshat of the pasuk, away from Torah that a lot of times tries to explain what the tzaddik is doing and this and that, to demands on real honesty and confronting yourself. The emphasis of, instead of the tzaddik being a person you davik to, and you kind of, through being davik to him, this is where you get your ruchnius, it's rather that the tzaddik is a rebbe who holds you accountable, understands your flaws, and demands and correction. That was the turn of Parashat Chassidus. So Chassidus in Poland was established by Noam HaMelech, the Chayza, and the Koznitzer, who were all part of the classic Chassidus. The Yid HaKadosh made the break. The Pshischa was the one who laid the groundwork. The Kotzke brought out some of its elements to its sharpest point, to a point where it could not become a mass movement. Chedush HaRim established a movement. Sfas Emes was the one who gave it probably its tzura, that became its tzura for Deiris. Okay, called.